I don't know whether you saw the interview Tony Blair gave on the Parkinson show the other week, the one in which he dared to drop the God word. That's what got all the publicity afterwards, but
the line that struck me, and it's so blindingly obvious you just realise how thick I must be for this to be the line that struck me, but the line that struck me was one he said much earlier in the interview. He was just talking about the job as Prime Minister, and he said, look, this job, it's all about taking decisions. It's what I do all day long. Decisions, decisions, decisions. So if you don't want to take decisions and you don't like taking decisions, then don't do the job. It comes with the territory. As I say, it's blindingly obvious, isn't it? What else do you expect prime ministers to do? And I've no doubt he's only got the hard decisions to make, because if they were easier, someone else would have made them earlier. It may have just been a bad week, which is probably why the line struck me, you know, and I was fed up with taking decisions and so on. But it just sort of rang true to me. Yeah, you can see that the man has to make decisions and calls all the time. And as he was discovering, you have to be held to account for the decisions you make. Now, I mention it just because Easter, for all of us, and you don't have to be Prime Minister, Easter is a decision-making time. That's the nature of it. Like it or not, Easter calls for a decision. It's a bit like Tony Blair getting his red box. You know, I imagine when it comes, the pile of papers, and more decisions. Well, it's like that with Easter. There are, if you like, the pile of papers. Well, even if it's just John, before we get to the chapter we're in, you've got the 18 previous chapters as he writes his book and tells us about God stepping into our world. The Word who became flesh and dwelt among us. This remarkable figure of history, Jesus of Nazareth, who again and again, again and again doesn't fit into the categories of ordinary human being, and whose whole life and whose remarkable, miraculous ministry, John keeps telling us, is pointing to a moment that's going to be the moment of glory. And it turns out to be Easter. A vivid, vicious death on a cross. But if I want to find the love of God, that, John tells me, is the place to look. God so loved the world, he gave his one and only, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. Something terrible to rescue us from, something that made Jesus shudder, something wonderful to rescue us for, that's given hope and joy to millions down the centuries. Yeah, Easter's like a red box, because it doesn't just tell me those truths, it actually says there's a decision for me to make. And as Jesus hung on the cross, you know, he's heard and he's seeing people make decisions. He'd watched Pilate, for example, sit on the fence. Very striking. And Pilate has taken his time. He's done his questioning. He's done his interrogating. He's done his interviewing of Jesus. He's established the facts. He's looked at the evidence. He knows the truth. Jesus is innocent. See, he says it more than once, doesn't he? Look at verse 4. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know I find no basis for a charge against him. Does it again in verse 6. See the second half of that verse? Pilate answered, you take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him. Innocent. Yeah, but Pilate is about to discover that finding the truth is not so much the answer. It's not the end of his problems. It's actually the start of them. You see, look at verse 12. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, if you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar, and anyone who claims to be a king, which they said is what Jesus had done, opposes Caesar. And Pilate is rapidly discovering that to follow the truth, now for him, it risks his career. His popularity ratings are going to be seriously damaged. His street cred, well, the crowd are baying for his blood, and he's not got an awful lot of credit in the bank with them in the first place. If he wants an easy way out, it's there for the taking, but it means leaving the truth buried for a day or three. Truth and the truth about Christ have rarely been an easy way out. I don't know whether you find it striking, but you know there's this Dan Brown Da Vinci Code book, bestseller for years, about to be the blockbuster film, isn't it? One of the striking things about that is the way people take it so seriously. I mean, as far as I can work out, any reputable art historian discredits it, any reputable church historian discredits it, any reputable Bible historian discredits it. And yet people seem to sort of still go on hanging on to it. And I read an article the other day, and it just made sense. He said, the thing you've got to understand is that people want it to be true. Because if it undermines the whole thing, then there are so many other options open to us. Yet the truth isn't the issue. They just would like it to be true. It doesn't matter what the evidence is. Too often it's like that for us, isn't it, with Christ? I remember, let's call him Ian. He was a good friend of mine. He was the skipper of a major sports team at one stage. And we'd been talking about the claims of Christ for a number of weeks and months. He came to see me to tell me the decision he got to on it. And he said, it stuck with him. This is nearly word for word what he said. It was something like this. Hughie said, I know Jesus is the Son of God. I know that there are needs in my life that I cannot meet, and he can. But I can't follow him. I said, why not? Well, he said, it's my friends. I've got a good set of friends. I've just made them. I really can't risk losing them. There's a sort of twisted honesty in all of that, wasn't there? In knowing he was being dishonest, and yet knowing I couldn't follow Christ half-heartedly. Well, here's Pilate. He spent all morning battling with himself, desperate to sit on the fence, endlessly tried to put off the decision. If you read through all the different gospel accounts, it is almost limitless, the twists and turns he makes. Finally, he washes his hands of it, passes the buck and the prisoner to the crowd. So he says, verse 16, finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. Only, of course, you can't do that. You can't duck out like that. You can't wash your hands. Well, you can wash your hands, but not of responsibility. And history's given its verdict, hasn't it? This Sunday, in churches up and down the land, they'll state it. I believe in Jesus Christ, crucified under Pontius Pilate. Now, Jesus had watched Pilate sit on a fence that isn't there. Must go on breaking his heart to watch us trying the same contortions, mustn't it? Easter decision. Pilate sat on the fence. The crowd? Yeah, he heard the crowd. Follow the crowd. An extraordinary way in which they start shouting, crucify, crucify. You remember in the other gospel accounts, Pilate gives them a choice. Because it was the tradition at that time of year, it was a kind of amnesty day, you released one prisoner. So he offered them Barabbas or Jesus. A murdering thief or a good man. Actually the most perfect man who ever lived. An extraordinarily they chose Barabbas. Barabbas, Barabbas, Barabbas. They found themselves shouting, crucify, crucify, crucify. I mean, scarcely credible. Except for the fact some of the things we land up doing when we're in crowds are scarcely credible, aren't they? You just get carried along by them. And the next morning, no doubt most of them regretted it. I mean, imagine, you're there, Saturday lunchtime, family meal, they're all around, you know, there's mum, dad, and the kids. There's a knock on the door, and you go to answer it, and who's at the door but Barabbas? Go away! No, please. What do you want? Well, I just saw you in the crowd yesterday, and I wanted to thank you for voting for me. Oh, leave us alone, will you? Well, no, look, it was really important to me, and I didn't want you to think that I was ungrateful. And you're going to say, I don't know what came over me. You certainly don't want him in at the meal table with the kids. Not a character like that. Only part of us does know what came over me, don't we? We have actually been there. Morally, we've faced the same issues. Good or evil. We've regretted it. We're embarrassed to think of it. It'd be a dreadful moment if I could actually name you the dates and the details of it. But I've chosen evil rather than good. Barabbas rather than Jesus. I've chosen to lie rather than tell the truth. To lust rather than love. To slander rather than honour. To destroy rather than to be patient. I may have done it with tongue or fist or boot or mind or pen, but we know. We've been there. It must have been heartbreaking for Jesus to hear those cries of the crowd, mustn't it? Barabbas, crucified. Must go on breaking his heart to hear people to whom he's given values, a sense of right and wrong, trample on their own conscience, even when they're doing nothing worse than what everyone else does. I can remember when I was a student hearing one of those open-air preachers on a kind of common near where the university campus was, got quite a following, and he was preaching away, and suddenly into the crowd came about four or five leather-jacketed guys, and on the back of their leather jackets, they'd got Satan's slaves written, and they started a chant going, Barabbas, Barabbas, Barabbas. Now, the one advantage that the preacher has in that situation is he's normally got the microphone. And as they were chanting away, when they finally paused for breath, he just turned to them and said, yes, Barabbas, but he only lived because my Jesus died in his place. That he'd watch Pilate try not to make a decision. And the crowd just gets swept along into the most ridiculous of decisions. And as Jesus hung on the cross where they'd put him, he then saw the soldiers too busy to notice there was a decision. Here's Jesus who's come to give his life as a ransom for many. Here is the greatest rescue act the world has ever seen taking place. And they didn't notice. So you look down to verse 23. When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. And this garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, let's not tear it, let's decide by lot who'll get it. And this happened that the scripture might be fulfilled, which said, they divided my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. So this is what the soldiers did. See, up there on the cross, he's rescuing the world. Down beneath him, they're playing poker, gambling for his clothes. Of that world-shattering rescue act, the only thing the soldiers picked up was a bit of clothing. But then, you see, they're not that untypical. Life is a blur for too many of us, isn't it? No time to think. You know, it's either the busyness, it's the pressure of everything else, the pace we go at, we hardly catch breath. Talking to some parents the other day, and they were very honestly telling me about their child coming home in tears, and when they asked why, she said, look, it was the school play today. I was in it, and you never came. He never asked me about it. The parents were heartbroken. They never mentioned it. They hadn't actually realized she was in it. The last thing they wanted to do was to hurt her. Just life had been a blur for them. Too busy. Never got round to it. And it's like that with the soldiers. So you see, here's Easter. Every mention of it this weekend, just remember the red box and a decision. Pilate, you can make his kind of decision and sit on a fence and you'll fool yourself and no one else. There is no fence. You can be like the crowd and follow the crowd. That guarantees you do nothing wiser than be like the person next to you. Or you can be the soldiers who never even saw there was a question to answer. It's very easy to do, isn't it? There'll be someone actually probably here now who's just sort of waking up to the fact that the talk is coming to an end, but your mind has just been full of all the decisions you've got to make this afternoon and you haven't really caught anything very much. I've said, I understand it, but that's just like them. They hadn't even noticed they'd taken a decision. Or if you read on the chapter, you'll suddenly discover there were one or two others who acted differently. Women. Who stayed close to this Jesus. John, still identified with him. Joseph of Arimathea, Nicodemus, lining up alongside the one who died on the cross to rescue the world. But yeah, the talk has come to an end. Because actually, decisions are things we have to take ourselves. And it's not just Tony Blair who takes them. Which Easter decision are you making?